Within your notes, you will see all of the verses that are necessary, but if you would open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 6, we'll go through about three of the chapters by the time we're done. Old Testament examples for the New Covenant man. Tonight we're going to be dealing with Noah. In Hebrews 11, that is called the Hall of Faith by some, and we've basically been following that as far as who our Old Testament examples are going to be. Though we did cover Cain, that was the negative example. Abel, of course, was the positive example. So in Hebrews 11, 7, you'll see, by faith Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, and then number 5, by which he condemned the world, and then on your last page there, you'll see number 6, and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. So basically, we're using Hebrews 11, 7 as our outline for tonight's study. Like I say, I have all of the verses after each question, or at least in the general vicinity of those questions, and figure this is a good way to actually have you do some of the work. So, according to Genesis 6, 8 and 9, 6, 22, 7, 1, and 8, 20, what are the descriptions of Noah's faith? Daryl, would you mind reading 6, 8, and 9, and then Mike, 6, 22, Sheila, 7, 1, and Carol, Genesis 8, 20. Okay, so what are the descriptions of Noah's faith? Okay, he's obedient. We see that in verse 22.
He was just and perfect.
Okay. Okay, in verse 9 there it says he walked with God, so there's going to be trust involved in that, yeah. Ah. And there'd be one more demonstration of his faith.
Righteous.
Okay, I guess there's one more than that. He worships the Lord there. He builds an altar and offers sacrifices. Exactly. Okay, in building the ark, his faith worked. Okay. So by faith, Noah, point number 2 there is being divinely warned of things not yet seen. According to Genesis 6:13, what has God told Noah? Jeannie, would you like to read verse 13 there on the page? Yeah. Okay, so he's going to destroy the people and the earth. Anything else we need to see as far as being divinely warned of things not yet seen? Now, if you have your Bibles open, you can actually look at chapter 6 and see if there's anything in verse 12 or 14 or something I might have missed. Okay. And we actually read a little bit more about that in chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. Pastors made reference to that a few times, where the sons of God, being fallen angels, took for themselves the daughters of men. They, through the reproductive process, which would be normally abnormal for angels with humans, but we have some men of renown, giants. They had a tendency to have some sort of a testimony that people knew. Whoa, that one's different. Okay? So, and that apparently was not all, because as you read through the rest of chapter 6, I do not have a problem with that interpretation of the first 4 verses. But as you read through the rest of chapter 6, everything that God says as far as the destruction coming upon man is not blamed on the demons. It is blamed on mankind. So even if the demons are involved in doing all of this stuff, man is sitting there saying, yeah, okay. In fact, notice, if you will, verse 6. For the Lord regretted that he made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. Now, why was that the case? Well, I guess maybe it's in verse... Oh, yeah. When the Lord saw that man's wickedness was widespread on the earth, and that every scheme his mind thought of was nothing but evil all the time. How many of you have ever heard of postmillennialism? Pastor has, and Rick Anderson has. Basically, these people believed that we were going to make things better. And when it got good enough, then Jesus is going to come back and set up his kingdom. After World War I, postmillennialism, they took a real big hit. When World War II came along, they took a bigger hit, and there's not too many of them around anymore. And of course, every now and again, you still hear people talk about how it's getting better. What's getting better? Technology. Gas mileage in your car, unless you bought one of those newer trucks. And they're better than they used to be, but not as good as a car. But are people getting better? We're more civilized now because we wear skinny jeans and... No. See what I'm saying? So the depravity of man is described in verse 5. As you read through the scripture, it's always there. In this culture, we have seen, because of the foundation of this country, we've seen where, wow, we've had it pretty good. And one might think, boy, it's just hard to believe that people are that bad. But over the last 20 years at least, and I'm sure those of you that are older would say even further back than that, we've really been seeing where, as a country, we've been taking a downturn. One of the things that we notice, those of us that have been on mission fields, is when we come back to the United States, we find out, boy, we're driving a whole lot more like a third world culture than we used to. Third world culture, it's me first, I'm second, and if there's room, you can be third. When you come up to a roundabout, kind of like down in Belleville, there's normally lights there, and there'll be three lanes. Two that'll go straight, and one that goes around the roundabout. Unless there's a right turn, then there might be a fourth lane. But if there's three lanes in Brazil, five cars will pile up on that line. India's that way too. Maybe seven cars in India. And 16 motorcycles. That's true. But it's me first, I'm second. Now, the guy that's over here, he should be taking that lane going around the turnabout. No, he's going to race you to get into one of those two lanes that are up there. And by the time you get to the two lanes, those five cars, they may all be going there. Well, you know, when we got down there, it's kind of like, whoa, these people don't know how to drive. And then you come home. Light turns green. What should you do in the St. Louis area? No, you should wait until at least five more cars go through their red light. So we are becoming much more third world in our approach to driving. Used to be, you coming down an entrance ramp on the highway, people would move over for you. Why? So you could get on, because you're thinking about someone else. You're treating them the way you'd want to be treated. Nowadays, coming down the entrance ramp, occasionally someone will get over, but that's like a remnant thinking. That's not how people are. So the wickedness of man is only evil continually from God's perspective. That has not changed even from Genesis chapter 6. Okay, question number 3. According to 6:17, what has God told Noah? How was God going to destroy the earth, and had Noah ever seen a flood? So 6:17 says, "And behold, I myself am bringing floodwaters on the earth to destroy from under heaven all flesh in which is the breath of life, everything that is on the earth shall die. So what has God told Noah? Okay, we're going to destroy everything. How was God going to destroy the earth? Mike just told us, with a flood. At that point, had Noah ever seen a flood? I mean, was there a hurricane off of the coast of... off the coast of the garden, yeah. For whatever reason, I thought that somewhere in there, God was going to talk about 40 days of and 40 nights of rain. And I'm sure that it's spoken about, but it's not as God is talking to Noah. And at that point, to our knowledge, Noah had never even seen rain. There was an artesian well, if you will, that fed four rivers. Now, in the King James, it says there's a mist, but we're feeding four rivers that is covering the land. I don't think it was a mist. I think it was a spring. And between that and the canopy above the earth, the water that was above the earth, there was no need for rain because it was probably kept at a constant, what's the good temperature? 75. I don't know, it might have been 80, but the humidity level was probably pretty good. There was a they talk about a double atmosphere, which doesn't mean a whole lot to me, but apparently perfect conditions for growth. And when you see some of the fossils of some of the leaves of some of the trees, wow, things grew. Everything was basically perfect, and here God is talking about a flood. What's a flood? See what I'm saying? Okay, number three, Noah moved with godly fear. According to Genesis 6, 22 and 7, 5, now you'll notice in the verses below, I have chapter 7, verse 4 through verse 10, because on the next page you're going to have some questions from those other verses. According to Genesis 6, 22 and 7, 5, what did Noah do? So, Jackie, would you mind reading chapter 6, verse 22, and I'll read 7, 4 through 10. So what did Noah do? Everything God told him to, right? Chapter 7, verse 4 and following, for after seven more days, I will cause it to rain on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. There's the rain. I knew it was in there someplace. And I will destroy from the face of the earth all living things that I have made. And Noah did according to all that the Lord commanded him. Noah was 600 years old when the floodwaters were on the earth. So Noah with his sons, his wife, his sons' wives, went into the ark because of the waters of the flood. Of clean animals, of animals that are unclean, of birds and everything that creeps on the earth, two by two they went into the ark to Noah, male and female, as God had commanded Noah. And it came to pass after 7 days that the waters of the floods were on the earth. So what did Noah do? Well, when he was told to, he went into the ark. We'll get to that in a moment. Okay, number four there, prepared an ark for the saving of his household. According to Genesis 5:32, when did Noah start his family? Deborah, would you like to read that one? Genesis 5:32, it's right there on the page. Okay, so when did Noah begin his family? 500 years old. You know, I don't know about you, but even relating the ages of those people to today, okay, if 100 years is equal to 10, well, that means he was 50. No, let's lower that. Okay, so every 100 years is worth, what, 7? So 5 times 7, 35. You know, maybe Noah's like a 35-year-old. No, he's 500 years old, okay? He's been around for 500 years. And then he has three sons, like he had something else to do for 500 years before he started his family. And, of course, we're worried about kids that are 30 years old and they haven't gotten married yet, right? But he's 500 years old when he starts his family. According to Genesis 7:7, that's in the verses above, how did Noah save his family? Julie, would you like to read 7:7 and the verses on the previous page? How did Noah save his family? Okay, so how did he save them? Got into the ark. Now, notice I haven't gotten into the details of the building of the ark. We're actually getting into the ark now. The ark's already built. If you want a good understanding of what the ark may have looked like, let me encourage you to go over to Kentucky and see it. Well, it's not the ark, but it's one built after the measurements thereof. And yeah, it's a six-hour drive thereabouts. And yeah, it costs so much money. It's worth the trip. There is no doubt when you look at this thing, getting two of every kind of animal in that, not a big deal. They give in a lot of answers and explanations of how they would have taken care of the waste of the animals, where they might have stored the food, how they would have gotten fresh water, ventilation. All of that is shown really, really well. Yes, they are speculating with the engineering abilities that they had in that day. Here's what they could have done. But very, very interesting. Also, if you're interested, go to the Glory Room. Ron Broadwater built himself an 8-foot, two-scale model of the Ark. And it's not quite as extravagant as Answers in Genesis 1, but it gives you an idea. And he talks about the kinds, and if you were going to take care of them, how much space would they take? And then compared to how much space is on the ark, a lot of good information on there. But we know he built an ark, okay? Now his family is getting into it. According to Genesis 7, 4 through 10, which I've already read, how long was Noah and his family in the ark before the flood came? 1 week. Which, listening to a Jewish preacher, completed Jew, he was a Messianic Jew, Christian, talk about that. He goes, you know, it's interesting. God told him to get into the ark a week before the flood came. That's much like us as the church being raptured into heaven 1 week, the 70th week of Daniel, a time of Jacob's trouble, before the second coming, when judgment is actually going to be finalized at that point. So thought that was interesting. According to chapter 7, verse 13, who was considered his family? Jonathan, it's right there on the page. So, who was Noah's family? Okay. Now, we don't have a name for Noah's wife. We don't have a name for Shem, Ham, and Japheth's wife. But does anybody know who they're related to? Okay, but Adam and Eve had all kinds of relatives that died in the flood. So Noah and his family are the only ones that lived through the flood. How many of you are Japhethites? Japhethites. How many of you are Shemites? We use the word Semite today, which would make you Jewish, Arab. There's probably a couple others. How many of you are Hamites? We have at least one partial Hamite. And of course, if everybody sent off their DNA, you might all find that there's a little bit of Hamite in you. Interesting how that whole thing works. But was that? He'd been called a Ham, yes. Ham was the father of four sons. One of them was Canaan. Where did he end up living? In the land of Canaan, which is where nowadays? It is Israel. Okay, then we had Mitzrayim, Put, and Cush. These three guys, their Hebrew words, names mean Egypt, Libya, and Ethiopia. I wonder where they moved. Africa. The Japhethites all moved up into Europe, Russia, and the Shemites are usually, most of them are located in the Middle Eastern area. Now, where did we get the Chinese? Well, there was some intermarriage and things like that, and people moved out there. The Indians, same thing. The Mongols, the American Indian. Pastor, were you telling me a while back that they have found through their DNA that they're actually possibly related to the Shemites? Okay, so they got some Shemite blood in them, possibly. And, well, how'd they get over here? Well, that's another story. We'll get to that later. Okay, basically Tower of Babel, and we can talk about that another time. Okay, moving right along. Okay, according to Genesis 7:23, Pastor, would you read that? 1 Peter 3:20, Rick Anderson, and Janetta, if you don't mind, 2 Peter 2:5, who survived God's judgment? So who survived God's judgment? Just in case you weren't sure that it was just Noah, his three sons, and all four of their wives, Peter lets us know, eight people. Now remember, they go into the ark a week before the flood comes. They've been building the ark for 100 years. Now, how do you think they did that? Did they use any contract labor? Probably wasn't union labor, but do you think they got people from the area to help them? Well, even if they didn't help them, yes, there was a sight to be seen, and most likely we see he's a preacher of righteousness. Most likely Noah is out there saying, hey, guys, you know, when I'm done with this thing, there's going to be a flood. And they're all going, what's a flood? Now, I don't think they were ignorant as to what a flood might have been. But again, they hadn't seen one. And so they're not believing that the flood's coming. In today's day and age, do people think by any stretch of their imagination that Jesus is coming back? Believers do. Well, most believers do. The world? Nah. We're technologically getting better and better, and we're going to make this world better, even if we have to put it in a one-world government. Oh, that sounds familiar. Okay. People are not believing. There's a coming judgment, just like in Noah's day. Okay. They're exactly. They are open that week, and apparently it says that God shut the door. I'm not thinking that that door is so heavy that the boys and Noah can't do it, especially with the help of an elephant. I'm wondering if there's actually a door there. There's an opening for animals to get in. But did they build a door, or did God just kind of close that area? I don't know. We would think they built a door, but either way, God closed it. Okay, number 10, according to Genesis 8:18, who got off the ark? Just in case there's any doubt. No, so Noah went out, and his sons, and his wife, and his sons' wives with him. Eight people. Okay, so he saved his family by being obedient to God. He prepared an ark for the saving of his household. There was enough room for plenty of other people. No one else wanted to go. Number 5 there, by which he condemned the world. According to Genesis 6:11-13, why was the world condemned? Sheila, would you mind reading? It's on top of the next page.
I will destroy them with the earth.
Okay, so the question again is, let me turn to that page, there we go. According to those verses, why was the world condemned? I think the what I wanted to get across here is our sin affects more than just us. when you consider what's happening in the political realm today with Kavanaugh, if Kavanaugh is guilty, did his sin affect more than him? It would have affected the girls that he supposedly did something against. It's affecting his wife, his kids, the political process at hand. Now, that's if he's guilty. If he's not guilty, sin is still affecting his wife, his kids, the political process, him. Sin affects more than just me. Yes, when I sow, I reap, but it affects people around me. Apparently, sin was so bad that the earth was corrupted. You know, Pastor has been talking to us for quite a while about how God so loved the cosmos, the world. Not talking about the people in the world. Yes, he loved them too, but he's going to restore the whole thing. Well, he destroyed the whole thing because sin had affected the whole thing that much. I don't know about you, but why are we killing the fish of the sea and the birds of the air? God has his purposes, his reasons, but sin had affected everything. So everything had to die except for that which was brought upon the ark. Okay, according to Genesis 7:20, Mike, how deep was the water? Okay, so 15 cubits upward. What do you think that means? The mountains are covered, okay, however high a mountain might have been in that first creation. The mountains were covered with 15 cubits of water. That's a good question. The ark out there in Kentucky was built by a 22-inch cubit, 22 inches long. Normally, 1.5 feet is what people think a cubit was. So their ark is 510 feet. We would be, in considering an 18-inch cubit, we'd be talking about 450 feet. So that extra 60 feet is because they added 4 inches to every one of the cubits. But we're going to say at least 18 inches, but it's supposedly the measurement from here to here. And of course, yours is going to be shorter than mine. Andre, his is going to be longer than mine. So it depends on who the king was at the time, but we'll assume somewhere around 18 inches. So 22 times 1.5, the shallow water is 33 feet deep. How long is anybody going to be treading water? If you could get through the initial opening of the windows of heaven and the waters of the deep coming up, if you could get through that turmoil, how long can you tread water? Okay. So, yeah. Well, if everything, okay, how does it say it here? The waters prevailed on the earth. Oh, no, that's a different one. Okay. Waters prevailed 15 cubits upward. Upward from what? That's what I'm thinking. And the mountains were covered. So if the mountains are covered, you're talking 15 cubits. So that's 22.5 feet. Sorry about that. 22.5 feet of water above the mountains. And again, I'm thinking the mountains aren't as high as they are today. In fact, their mountains may have been hills, okay? And the reason why they're so different afterwards is, remember, you got all that water that's above the firmament, and you've got all the water that's in the ground now out here. How do you get rid of it? Well, you got to push down on this ocean floor and push up on the mountain, and if you're going to get all that water, you've got to push really deep, and therefore you got Mount Everest, 7 miles high. The Laurentian, I think is the name, the trench, it's over 7 miles deep. So that's how you, but the mountains back then probably were not anything like Mount Everest. Yes. That's a very good possibility. That's a very good possibility. But again, we're speculating, but very good possibility.
Because at that point, there wasn't the fear of man.
Correct.
They weren't being beaten or hunted or anything like that.
Doesn't happen until after the flood, right? Okay.
2.5 feet above the mountains in this area. Yeah.
Yeah, and again, when you study the concept of the flood, it's the people that don't believe that are saying local flood, kind of like, no, it can't work that way, especially when you see the fossil record around the world, it's good evidence that it's a universal thing. Okay, that brings us to the next question, number 13. According to Genesis 7:24, how long was the water on the face of the earth? Daryl? Okay, now, the concept of prevailed is once they reached their maximum height, they stayed that way for how long? How many months is that? Okay, now that's 5 months with the water at the highest level. Then there's another 150 days that the water is receding until the ark actually sets on ground. Then there's another 40 days before he sends out the raven. Then there's another 7 days before he sends out the dove. Then there's another 7 days before he sends out the dove again. They're actually in the ark for, I think it's like 300 and it's just under a year or just over a year. So this question is not a trick question. It's just the waters are prevailing. They're staying at the same level for 150 days, what we would consider 5 months. Okay, number 5, and he became the heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. According to Ezekiel 14:14 and 20 and 2 Peter 2:5, which is on the previous page, what kind of testimony did Noah gain because of his faith? So, Jeannie, would you mind reading Ezekiel 14:14 and then Jackie 14:20? And then 2 Peter 2:5 says, and did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of 8 people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly. So what kind of testimony does Noah have because of his obedience, his faith? He's righteous. He's a preacher of righteousness. And he's so righteous that he's put in the category of only 2 other men in the Bible, Daniel and Job. Now, I don't know about you, but that kind of says something. But notice in the Ezekiel passage, if these 3 guys were here praying, the only ones that would get saved out of this situation that's about to come upon my people is those 3 guys. Because when God finally says enough is enough, he means enough is enough, right? And so, but he's put in the company of Daniel and Job. Were those guys pretty kosher? Yeah, I don't know about you, but don't want to go through what Job went through. And totally understand when he's questioning and defending himself and, you know, I didn't do anything to deserve this. I'm with you, Job. I totally understand that. I'm not sure I would have been so kind. And then Daniel, man, he's there for 70-some-odd years, and he's still holding out hope. People are going back. God said so. It's going to happen. So yeah, he's got a pretty good testimony at this point. Okay, according to the verses down below here, Mark 24:37 and 38, Luke 17:26-27, how different were the days that Noah lived in compared to ours? Julie, would you mind reading Matthew 24:37-38 and Jonathan, the Luke passages there? Okay, so how different were the days that Noah lived in compared to ours? I think the idea here of eating and drinking, they had their parties, they ate their meals, they're marrying, they're given in marriage. Everything is just commonplace. Everything that would happen at any time in world history, other than during the flood, during the judgment periods, that was happening. Now, remember 6:5? If we go back to the first page, we got to go all the way back to Genesis 6. When the Lord saw that man's wickedness was widespread on the earth, and that every scheme his mind thought of was nothing but evil all the time. Now, with that in mind, here they are eating and drinking. What do you think that, how that showed itself, the wickedness of man? Gluttony and drunkenness. We don't have that problem today, do we? Okay. Marrying and giving in marriage. How does that show itself in light of 6:5? My sister, when she got married, my dad came to the wedding, and everyone had fear and trepidation because they knew my dad couldn't control himself when he was drinking. And so they were afraid somehow he was going to mess that thing up. That's only in my family, right? No one else has any problems like that? Whole point being is the wickedness of man shows itself not just in the sin that we know that people participate in, but in everyday things we see it. You know, we don't sell our kids, do we? I'm starting to read stories about people that are selling their children. Now, in most cases, it's usually because they're homeless. They want something better for their kid. But saw recently where one lady was selling her children for drugs. Another one was using her children for sexual immoral purposes for the purpose of getting something out of that. See, everyday business gets defiled because of the wickedness of man. And it operated like that right up until the time that the flood came and destroyed them. So with that in mind, notice the last question. Can we be like Noah? One of the points I really appreciated that Pastor brought out last week was Enoch walked with God. When we think about Jesus walking with God, Jesus always did that which was pleasing to the Father. We sit there and say, yeah, but he was God. I mean, come on. Yeah, he was a man, but he was God. He's got this thing going for him that we don't have. But Enoch didn't have that. Enoch was a man like us. And he didn't just live for 70, 80 years if he's strong. He lived for 365 years, and he was not because God took him. He walked with God. Noah finds grace in the eyes of the Lord. He's 500 years old when he starts building the ark. He's 600 years old when he gets into the ark. He's in the ark for a year. By the way, Shem is 100 by the time they get into the ark. He's in the ark for a year. Afterwards, they get out. You got a new creation, if you will. And he gets himself a vineyard. Now, whether or not he knew what would happen to grapes, the fermenting process, some people try and say, well, things are different now because the double atmosphere isn't there. The weather is different. And so he didn't realize. He thought he was making grape juice, and he ended up making wine, and then he drank it and got drunk. I don't know about you, but if you're part of a destruction of the world and you're the only one of eight people left over, that's not stressful in any way, shape, or form, is it? I imagine it probably was. And, you know, so he responded in the flesh possibly. Again, don't know. But he walked with God in the midst of all of that depravity. I imagine most of them would have been already buried because the heavy things go down first and then the silt would come in afterwards and cover everything up. But you still know, Should we invite the neighbors over for dinner? No, there aren't any. So, somewhere in a rush that may weigh on a person. But again, in the midst of all that depravity, he walked with God. So the question is can we be like Noah? Okay, we have Christ's righteousness, like Noah was righteous in the eyes of God because he found grace in the eyes of God. Okay. We have the Holy Spirit living within us, who empowers us to do as God has commanded us to do. I liked what Pastor had to say this past Sunday morning about how we get that thing kicking. We've got to know what he wants us to do, right? And then what? Start doing it. And as you start, the Spirit empowers you to do. Yeah, think about it. I want you to build an ark that's somewhere between 450 feet long and 510 feet long. Kind of like, where am I getting all that wood? Who's paying for this thing? I mean, I got all kinds of leaning on my own understanding that says, you want me to start when? I got to figure out how we're going to do this, how we're going to pay the workers, so on and so forth. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he directs your path. So the whole point being is, can we walk like Noah did? The answer is yes. It really does come down to, instead of leaning on our own understanding, we are seeking first. We are submitting ourselves to doing what God has called us to do. So, any questions or thoughts? Pastor, is it Williamsburg? Where the ark is? Yeah, it's south of Cincinnati by about 45 minutes or so. But if you just look up answersingenesis.com on the internet, they'll have a link to it, and they'll have a map and everything. But if you got a weekend free and you can go see that and the Creation Museum, it only takes a couple hours to walk through the ark. And if you're older and you go a little bit slower, 3-4 hours to see the whole of the ark. There is a petting zoo outside. It's cold enough where there might not be too many animals. But if you have a weekend, you can drive out there on a Friday, go to the ark in the morning, and then in the afternoon you go see the Creation Museum, go back on Sunday, see the Creation Museum, and then come home. Well worth the trip.